So welcome to my podcast. My name is David Leibovitz. For those of you that don't know me, and for those of you that do, I have a website, davidleibovitz.com. And even more important, I have a newsletter, davidleibovitz.substack.com. And in my newsletter, I list show notes for this podcast and others, recipes, stories about life in Paris, the ups and downs, the good and bad, the delicious. I don't mention the things that aren't so delicious because I avoid those. But there's lots of things about Paris in my newsletter, and you're welcome to subscribe to that, and you'll get notified of future podcasts. But today I have a special guest. We're neighbors, actually, after maybe knowing her for 10 years.
I think a bit more. I was doing the math in my head.
Okay, we keep moving closer to each other.
Yes.
And now here we are.
Soon I will be moving in.
Okay. Well, you're here in my Paris kitchen. I'm here with Jane Birch. And Jane is the owner of La Cuisine Cooking School in Paris, which has been around for how many years?
We are going into our 15th year.
Whoa, I thought you were going to say 8 or 9 or something.
Yes, 15 okay. years.
You took a couple years off, though, for vacation. No, it was like there were strikes. There was
yes,
a pandemic.
We've had a few things that have kept us in and out of the office, let's say.
Jane froze when I said the word vacation. But Jane, actually, we're sitting in my apartment, and Jane was one of the few people I invited to come over and look at the apartment before we bought it.
Yes, that was super exciting.
What was super exciting?
Well, it's always nice to look at things from a fresh point of eyes when mm-hmm. your only interest is to help a friend, and it's not uh-huh. emotional. An apartment uh-huh. searching in Paris, as you know, is very emotional.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's another podcast. But I actually remember having a conversation with you on the phone with Romain, because we were in negotiations to buy the apartment. And in France, a lot of things happen when you're buying an apartment. You've done that a couple of times.
Yes.
Just, you know.
Yes.
And there was a problem with the seller, a situation where the seller wasn't that interested in selling, which you can only understand if you live in France.
Absolutely.
I think.
Yes.
And you sort of helped me get the point across to Romain, and you had some great ideas. So thank you. You're welcome to move in here whenever you want. There's a lot of dishes to wash.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we only have one bedroom, so we have a new couch.
Which is beautiful. Okay. I'm very excited to see it.
Yeah, it took the hardest thing in the world is two gay men deciding on a couch.
You did good. Okay. You did good. It's gorgeous.
Well, we didn't need your help on that, but thank you for getting me into the apartment. So you've had La Cuisine in Paris for 15 years, and you've got a book.
Yes,
you wrote
I
a
do.
Book
yes.
called The French Ingredient.
Yes, yes.
And I like the subtitle because it's a memoir.
It is a memoir.
Subtitles are hard. People don't realize when you write a book, the title's hard and the subtitles are hard.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, the title and the subtitle gave me anxiety, trying to come up with something that encapsulates the book, especially mm-hmm. for La Cuisine, and it's not a cookbook. So mm-hmm. that was quite important to get that across.
Okay, maybe you could say, this is not a cookbook.
The subtitle, if you're looking for recipes, move onwards, please.
No, if you don't.
Go to David's.
You're actually a really good business person. You say, no, if you're looking for recipes, take a class at La Cuisine, because that's what you do.
Yes.
You teach cooking classes, not yourself.
Right.
But you have chefs come and do cooking classes. And we're going to get to that in a bit.
Okay.
But I want to talk a little bit about your book because I read it. I read it actually a couple of months ago. And I didn't flag things. Oftentimes, if I know someone's going to be on the podcast, I put post-its everywhere. And I didn't flag things, but there were so many things I wanted to talk about because you hit on some really good points about Paris in the book. You have a lot of keen insights, not as a tourist or as an occasional resident, as a lot of people see Paris, especially in English, from people right. who don't live here.
Yes.
Especially now as more and more things are going online. But you've lived here for a long time. And without giving away too much of the story of the book, in the beginning of the book, you say, Paris laughed at me immediately. So how did you get here? And I'm just going to say you're from Chicago. Tell
okay.
us a little bit about your journey.
So I got here and I've always been very transparent that I worked in a bank for many years before La Cuisine existed. And that's actually what brought me to Paris. And I was not in love with Paris. at all.
You didn't like it.
I did not like it.
You had a bad experience.
I had a very bad experience.
What happened? You had PTSD.
Yeah, I did. You know, I romanticized Paris like so many other people, and I came over with my mom, and at an age where you so desperately want to fit in, and I had a couple of occasions where it was very clear that I did not at all. Not speaking properly, making a few gaffes of not saying bonjour. And these were years when probably people spoke less English. Mm-hmm. So going out to a restaurant where you're trying to fit in and you pronounce something and somebody, or, you know, specifically the waiter or waitress looks at you, and in a term I use, they look at you as if you smell. And that, that kind of turned up... whatever uttered out of my mouth was so offensive and horribly pronounced.
Okay.
It almost shocked them.
Well, you have red hair, and you talk about that in the book. And I actually had lunch today, and we were talking about people with red hair, because a friend of mine has a daughter with red hair.
Okay.
And there aren't a lot of redheads in France.
There's not.
Yeah.
There's not. So already I kind of stuck out.
You're like, okay, where can I get my hair dyed?
Exactly. So, you know, there's a few things that gave me away as a visitor. And, you know, again, at an age when you so desperately want to fit in, I was in my teens. And so, I was embarrassed. And that just stuck with me for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. But then as an adult, you came back to Paris in a very sort of roundabout way.
Yes. So I lived in London for several years, and I would come back to Paris on weekends. Very different existence. Actually had fun. I was with girlfriends that I worked with in London. And then Paris became magical, because why wouldn't it? For a weekend when you're, you know, shopping and eating at nice restaurants and having a good time, fabulous. Mm. But I still didn't romanticize it, because I had in the back of my mind that very bad initial experience.
Okay. But you were living here then?
That's when I was in London.
Okay. So you would come here?
Hang out for a weekend, go back. Everything was peachy keen.
Oh, yeah. It's a great place to visit.
I think, didn't Bill Gates say it's a great place to spend your money, not earn it, or something like that?
I think that was Martha Stewart.
Was it?
No. She said something about French people don't want to work or something last year.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, I found them to be very hard workers, but we could talk about that.
Yeah.
So then an opportunity came up for me to move here for the bank that I was working in. And I thought, I can't believe this. Of all places, this is unreal, but it was a great opportunity, and I was at a point in my life where it made sense to move, so here I came.
There used to be this organization called Bloom Where You're Planted, and it was for people who had moved to Paris, and I spoke, they asked me to speak once or twice, and a number of people didn't want to be here.
Yeah.
They were spouses, or they were here for work, and they couldn't. One guy was really upset because he bought a banana at a supermarket and they wouldn't give him a bag. And I'm like, well, it's okay. One banana, you know? And I was like siding with the French. And they couldn't talk about how they didn't enjoy being here, because everyone's like, but you're in Paris.
Yes.
So you were coming for the weekend and you were having this amazing time, and you said, you know what? I'm going to move there. And everything changed.
I felt a bit more confident, and then you realize that living in a city, like any city, is very different than just visiting it. And then you have to do the admin of life, which in France can be challenging.
Well, it's also a very personal city. Like, people are really, and I don't say this in a bad way, but in your face. There's a lot of FaceTime. You go somewhere like New York, and it's very transactional. You go in a store, and you buy something, and you leave, or you go out to eat. Although my French neighbors were saying they got this guy at a bar, this bar owner accused them of like stealing a flower that he had on his lapel. He's like, no. He's like,
okay.
The guy goes, make sure you put the flower. I was like, what? You
know, yeah.
So these things happen everywhere. But Paris is definitely a much more personalized space.
Absolutely. It is. And it's very relationship oriented.
Yes.
Yes.
So how did you had trouble making friends? And I love the part in your book. And I'm going to tease you about this for the rest of your life.
Gosh.
You Googled, how do I make friends in Paris? People don't realize, though, it's hard to make friends here.
Very.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, because there's so many people that come with different circumstances. You get the people who are here just for a 2 or 3 month life excursion. You get those who are trailing spouses. You get those who are working. And finding your niche, one, making friends that are beyond just friends of circumstance, mm-hmm. i.e. we're all here and we don't know anyone else and we need to complain with somebody that we can do so in our language. That's hard. It takes a long time to curate those relationships, I think.
Well, I have French friends who are like, yeah, it's really hard to make friends here. But I think, you know, when you grow up somewhere, you have friends because, you know, you went to school or you worked. Like, yes. I didn't go to school. I mean, I went to pastry school, but I didn't make, you know, everyone was coming from all over the world. And I work for myself, so.
Yeah.
But I learned from, like, Romain how to be much more how to go up and talk to people.
Right.
And in some ways, that's French, but in some ways, that's not so French.
So that's a good reflection, because it's kind of both. And I think this is why we love, Paris is just filled with these beautiful contradictions, mm-hmm. as are their people.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. And I think that's why it makes the city fascinating. Like, it's easy. You know, you must greet people. So there's this assumption that, okay, well, I have an opening to talk to them. But no, it's not about friendship. It's about being polite.
Well, there's also, though, this contrast between, and this is always a popular subject for some people, the contrast between politeness and rudeness.
Yes.
And I remember there was an article in Les Parisiens, the newspaper in French, and they were talking about, are French people, are Parisians rude to tourists? And they talked to a French guy, and he goes, oh, no, it's worse the way Parisians treat each other. And I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But there is this funny, people can be very abrupt.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily rude, but like walking into you on the sidewalk, and they'll purposely try to do it. And in your book, you talk about alpha, how France is all about alphas. And that's kind of interesting because you worked in an office.
Yes.
And you had a very interesting experience. So tell us, let's talk a little bit about alphas. What does that mean in French society, in culture?
Oh, goodness, that's a good question. What is an alpha?
That's your next book.
So I believe, and this is, you know, the world according to Jane and my limited experience.
Well, 15 years, you've had two French, you've had a French husband,
yeah.
and a French boyfriend.
Yes.
And probably some other.
And God knows how many trysts in between.
You can't remember.
So I would say that's actually a really hard question to answer. Mm-hmm. I feel like this, I want to sit and like have quiet time and write down ideas, because mm-hmm. that's actually a big question.
Well,
like, how would you answer it?
The alpha thing. I think that, you know, France was a monarchy,
yes.
and power is very important,
yes.
in France. Who has power, who doesn't? I remember when Carla Bruni married Nicolas Sarkozy, he was not a popular president. She was an international star. You know, she wasn't sitting at home making tea and watching TV all day. She was
right.
working, and she's
right.
a smart, intelligent, talented woman, so forth. And that happens to other presidents too here often, you know. Well, we won't get too much into that, the French presidents and their partners.
Yes.
But everyone's like, well, she was in it for the power. I was like, well, she's actually a powerful person. She doesn't really need to get married to someone for power. And they're like, you don't understand. And it's true, people like power here. And I think because they've had it, they've been ruled. There's also still that feudal mentality. A lot of people, even in Paris, they're just a couple generations away from living in the countryside.
Yes.
Where the mentality is different.
Right.
You know, in America, we have that old like Hatfields versus McCoys kind of thing.
Yes.
It's like, well, this is my land, this is my territory, and so forth.
Yes.
So I think there's still some of that. Lingering.
I absolutely agree. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, you're right, personal power is very important. And I think also going along with that is presentation,
mm-hmm.
to always appear in control. I think that's very, very, very important to people.
Well, you talk about in your book, too, how French value expertise and how they have this MOF
yes.
designation. And I'd like you to talk a little bit more about that, because the French educational system is very vertical. I like that chapter in your book
okay.
a lot. So
okay.
let's talk a little bit about that.
So that's, you know, I
what
guess.
What is an MOF? And
a maire ouvrier de France.
Right.
A maire ouvrier de France. So MOF is short. And that, when I try to explain that to people, I translate it, rightly or wrongly, into the best worker of France.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
And in the MOF, you can have woodwork, you can have glasswork, steelworks, mm. all sorts of artisanal trade. And of mm. course, one in the domain that we love is gastronomy.
Mm. And so, bartending is
and
an
bartending,
MOF too. Yeah.
We had the first ice cream MOF, which is in Glace-au-Paris.
Uh-huh.
So it's expanding now, and it's a recognition of expertise.
Mm-hmm. And a chance to generate more paperwork because there's tests.
Yes. And apparently very, that I don't know that side of it, but I imagine it is extraordinarily rigorous.
There's a really good film documentary, The Gods of Pastry, I think it's called, about the MOF competition in pastry. And it was kind of harrowing to watch. You know, chapter four, you have cracking the code, cracking the codes of France. And you talk about people, you know, valuing expertise, but also education. People get educated and they take this test called the BAC, the baccalaureate, you know, changing careers. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So this I have found fascinating.
Or not talking about it. Not changing careers, I should
right.
say.
Right. No, but you know what? It's fascinating because I had a lot of those discussions when I was deciding to leave working in banking because that was just unheard of.
Yeah.
You know, people start a career very young here, which is so different than the U.S. We kind of have the opportunity to go to school and then try different things.
Liberal arts education.
Which I talk a lot about. Try to explain liberal arts to a French person. Mm-hmm. They cannot understand why. What does that mean? There is no such thing as jack of all. No, there is a such thing as jack of all trades, master of none, according to the French mentality. I think they're very focused on an area of expertise.
Well, they don't change business, like people don't change careers. I think it's changed in the last five or six years.
Absolutely. It's evolving. It's really evolving. But, you know, there's a point in time where I think being an expert in your industry was much more revered than taking the leap to do something different.
Well, I think what people who don't live in France don't realize is that in France, you take this test when you're in high school, and it's kind of like we used to take the SATs, but it's much more intense. And the results of that test decide if you can go to certain schools or not.
Yes.
And if you don't do well, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
I've kind of.
Yeah, there's no choice. And that's what's.
You can't become a doctor. You can't go, you know, there, but all sorts of fields.
Yeah. Yeah. That's surprising. I think when people learn that, when I learned that, my goodness, it's such a long age. You have to not only declare what you want to do, but there's a barrier to entry if you don't succeed on that test.
Yeah.
It's just done.
And people who want to work in the food business, they can start at 13 years old.
Yes. It's a career. Yeah. I love to explain that to people as well. It's not necessary. There are plenty of career changers, certainly, but it is a field that is highly respected. It's not a second choice. There's a lot of people that this is their first preferred choice and they start very young.
Although it's interesting because a bakery owner in Paris who's quite well known, in an interview, they said, you know, in order to be a good baker in France, it used to be you had to be big, strong, and dumb.
Well, geez.
Back in those days, I think, you know, people who couldn't get into a good school, it was like, okay, you got to go work in a bakery and you got to go knead dough, you know, for the rest of your life. Whereas I decided to do that, you know,
right.
I never worked in a bread bakery. Well, I did once and I was like, that's enough. I got it. Yeah, I'm going to buy my bread. But I think there is some truth to that. People weren't educated. You know, they didn't go to college. They went to baking school or they went to go work in a bakery or a pastry shop or something.
Yes.
And
yeah, I'll agree with that. But I'll also say that I think the element which is beautiful is there may be one or two people that decided this is what I want to do at a young age and they were able to pursue it. And there was no person saying to them, oh, my goodness, no, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a choice.
So your decision to leave banking and become, you talk about this quite a bit in the book, because there was a big period of time where you said, okay, I'm going to start a cooking school. And what made you say, I'm leaving banking, you're not a cook?
Not a professional cook.
You're a good home cook.
Good home cook.
I've had dinner at your house a couple times. You're a good home cook. What made you make this leap?
Okay. This I love to talk about, David, for a couple of reasons. It's very easy to romanticize our lives here in Paris. So I like to be transparent about how La Cuisine started. Mm-hmm. La Cuisine was not a lifelong dream at all. Had you have asked me 16 years ago, would I have a cooking school in Paris? I would have looked at you like you were growing a third head.
What did you kind of think your life would look like when you moved to France?
I had spent so many years working in the bank, trying to get to certain points, and I was here working in a bank and had just been promoted. So until I had my moment where I realized it was all great until it wasn't, I just thought I would continue my career in banking.
Okay.
And I do explain in the book, it was due to several very difficult life lessons with family that made me stop and say, what am I doing? And is this where I want to be? And I realized it wasn't. And I didn't have all the answers. And I like to share that because I know so many people who are unhappy with their everyday and feel even worse that they can't identify what that next thing is for them. So I want people to have courage that something will come. You have to remain open and hopeful. And even at the darkest point, something interesting may come to you, and it's your choice to explore it or not. So that was
cuisine. So you just said, you know, you had this idea to open a cooking school and you decided to do it.
Yes.
So you went into the bank and quit. You said, I quit.
It was a good time for me to leave in the industry. And I said, you know, this is not working. That was a tough discussion.
And then you just went out and...
No. So, you know, everything in France is very slow.
Yes.
So I decided I was going to leave. And, you know, La Cuisine had come to me as an idea. I'm going to credit Elizabeth Gilbert in her book, Big Magic. Sometimes ideas choose you. You don't choose them. It came to me. I started playing with it in my mind first, which is how I do anything. And then it just didn't feel so hard. And then I realized I knew people in food. And I asked them about it, and then I started to imagine what the location would look like. And it was almost this groundswell of the universe making me feel that it was the right thing.
Okay.
And it slowly came together.
So when you first opened La Cuisine, I'm giving away the whole book. But people, you should get the book because it's a really great read. It's The French Ingredient by Jane Birch, and it's available at your local bookstore or online.
Yes.
Or at the La Cuisine website.
Yes.
LaCuisine.com.
Wait, sorry, LaCuisineParis.com.
Paris.com.
Jeez, you can't get good help these days, I tell you.
So you decided to open a cooking school, but you didn't, the first itineration of the school was what?
It was a cooking school in French.
Okay.
That's how it started.
But where was it? Was it in this beautiful classroom, you know,
so,
with a view of the Seine?
No, it was not. So this is another good story of how everything can go wrong for a small business. Had found a location, built in two kitchens. So I'll leave you to do the math on the most expensive renovation in your house is kitchens. And we build two and then realized we were not in a location suited to the type of business that we had.
And you realize that after you spent a mid to high six figure. No.
You know, putting in kitchens and tiling and water is expensive. It's an expensive job. So that was very painful. I learned that, you know, it was not the right location. There was a loophole in our lease. It could have stayed and fought it out, but sometimes you decide that the battle is continuing with another project, not fighting.
But didn't you also have a problem with le pouvoir, the neighbors?
Yes.
Yes.
They hated us. They hated us. So
we're talking about this feudal mentality. So I kind of, it's an interesting.
Yes. I think thing. The French love a battle. You can see it the way they drive. You can see it how they walk down the street.
Maybe Parisians.
Parisians. Yeah. Yes, you're right. How they'll like a dinner discussion can turn heated, but it's not taken personally. They just love a battle.
I remember last summer we were away for 3 weeks down in the south of France. And we took the train home and we arrived at night. And I was like, I'm going to go to the grocery store and buy some food. And it was like, people were so aggressive. I was like, breathtaking. It was people were so aggressive, pushing and trying to get out of there and waiting in line. They were trying to get in front of, you know, looking ahead, see, the, you know, like, it's like just calm down, you know, wait a minute. Like every, you know, it's like, you're right though. So you had problems with a neighbor.
Yes.
Okay. That could be another book, Problems with Neighbors.
And those take on such significance.
Because it's your livelihood and it's your life.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, we already have this conflict in Paris because it's so small. The bottom of most buildings is commercial. The top is residential.
Yeah. The store level was always the ground floor. And the first floor was where the shopkeeper lived.
Right.
And that's why the ceilings are low.
Yes.
And then the next floor is the noble étage, the étage noble, on dit. The second story is always like the beautiful story.
Exactly. So you already have this innate conflict. You have people who want traffic and noise and clients, and you have the others that just want a quiet existence.
Yeah, they want to have a noble existence.
A noble existence. I will take that, please. Mm-hmm. So you already have this conflict.
And people are often surprised when I talk about Paris. I say, you can't grill. And they go, why not? Oh, grilling? Why? And I go, because people don't like the smell of food.
Right.
So talk a little bit about that, because you had a cooking school in a courtyard of a building.
It was in a courtyard of a building.
And you're cooking.
Cooking. Now, mind you, at that point, a new business, if there were five clients in the space of a month, I felt like it was a jackpot.
Okay.
But that's the life of any new business. So there wasn't that much activity, but it is true. It's with food. And when you have what we call a nuisance, a nuisance business, right, which already makes you feel great that you're called a nuisance, right?
Olfactive.
Right. You've got olfactive, which is smell, or sound.
No. Yeah.
So we were in that category, and we did not have the right extraction.
Mm-hmm. Nor like a ventilation system.
A ventilation system. And yes, even if it's the smell of croissants, it will offend people.
Yeah.
So you have to evacuate those odors, and we didn't have the right mechanism to do so effectively.
So at the time, though, you had some help, because you were married to a Frenchman.
Yes.
And fortunately, he spoke good English, but spoke excellent French.
Yes.
And he had probably helped you get through a lot of those things.
Yes.
So you were in this space. You had like five people maybe every month or something. You had a couple of good nights.
Yes.
There was one where people wouldn't leave. French people like to stay up.
Parisians
like to stay up late.
We got the overflow of people who could not book elsewhere for their corporate Christmas party. So we benefited.
Okay. So that's another story in the book. But you decided to, you found this other location. And how'd you find it? Because a lot of people don't realize in France, there's no like multiple listings. Like if you want to look at commercial properties, you can't just open the book or talk to an agent, or you want to find an apartment or a house. You have to go to the neighborhoods and talk to all the agents and talk to people.
Yes.
So how'd you find this location?
That was actually a friend who knew where La Cuisine currently was not going to work, and called to say, listen, there is a location on the quay. Do you want to look at it? Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was, okay, do we stay here and fight? Do we try to move? And I'm doing the math in my mind about this new location, thinking, you know, gosh, okay, well, got to restart.
You just spent a lot of money.
Right, got to restart.
Can't... But when you say quay, that's the banks of the Seine.
Oh, sorry, the banks of the Seine. Absolutely. Yes. So I said, well, no, not interested. And he came back and said, okay, well, you can look in another 60 years because they don't come up that often.
Like, oh,
so, you know, so nothing to make you feel like, damn it. Well, no, I want to see it right now. Thank you. So
you found this location, but your clientele was French at first. You were like, we're going to do French cooking classes for French people.
Yeah.
And a French friend of mine, when I moved here, she was doing cooking classes, and she said she didn't like to have French people in her classes because they already knew how to cook. And she taught mostly Americans or people from outside of France. So you decided to change directions for the school.
Change directions.
And what was that?
So that kind of happened. You know, actually, let me credit a gentleman by the name of Daniel Rose. He won't even remember this. But early on in La Cuisine's existence, I had the pleasure of meeting Daniel just very briefly. I don't even think we had opened at that point. And Daniel said, Jane, the only business that's not going to succeed is the one that doesn't do what clients ask of it. So I kept that in the back of my mind. And playing in the French market, one, for a new business, was very difficult. We could not do classic French cuisine for French clientele. It's boring. Mm-hmm. They're not interested.
Yeah.
So it was Thai or Italian. Mm-hmm. So, you know, played around with that market. And then I thought it would be neat to have a class in English, again, just an idea that came for the visiting market. And so
it didn't just come. I think you're not giving yourself enough credit because you had the failure before.
Yes.
And you did that. So you actually, you were working toward that decision.
Working toward it. So let's talk about, because this then puts us into intuition. So what is intuition? It's nothing but all the data you've gathered before that you employ. Yeah. And you're right. I have been gathering data subconsciously or consciously around what would work and what wouldn't. So went into the English-speaking market and saw more and more that there was a demand to do classes in English for those visiting the city. And we were not the first. Cooking with Class was already on the market doing a great job. I was not necessarily aware of them, because that was not what I researched in starting to set up a business. So,
well, a friend of mine who has a couple of restaurants in Paris, he said to me, having a restaurant's not about the food, it's about, he's like, my job is solving problems.
Yes.
He's like, that's all I do all day. And consciously or subconsciously, you're solving people's problems for them. Because people used to say, we want to learn to make macaroons in Paris. Where can we go? We want to learn to make croissants. And I mean, when I started doing tours myself, sometimes French people say, well, why, they should have a French people taking people around Paris. I was like, well, that's fine, but I understand Americans and what Americans want to see. And so I'm sort of providing that bridge,
right?
This multicultural bridge. And French people could and do what we do.
Absolutely.
But I think there's something reassuring for people want to, like, I've been to your school a lot. You have French chefs.
Yes.
And
yes,
how many, what percentage of the chefs would you say are French?
Right now, all of them.
Okay.
100%. And we've had wonderful English-speaking, native English-speaking chefs, but right now they're 100% French.
Okay. When I did my week-long tour, we used to do a tour, and we had Eric, who was a wonderful chef.
He was. I miss him.
Yeah. He was, like, my favorite person in Paris. What do you think is the hardest thing for people? Like, you deal with tourists a lot.
Yes.
A lot of visitors.
Yes.
And everyone's stressed out. They're on vacation. They're excited. Their adrenaline's running.
Yes.
They had, like, their kids are back at the hotel fighting or whatever. So tell us about some of the stories, like, what are some of the strangest things that happened in the school? You don't have to mention names or anything, but...
This is the book after I closed the school, David.
Okay.
No, I'm teasing. So firstly, you have to keep in mind, I've now, after several years, decided I'm not selling cooking classes, I'm selling memories. And when you're selling memories, that's very difficult because everybody has different ideas on what they want their memory to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we have had, yeah, we've had some real fascinating things happen. I can tell, I've gotten real good at this, I think. I can tell when a family comes in at what point they are in their vacation.
Ah, okay.
I can tell you if they just arrived, if they're in the middle, or it's time to get home.
Okay.
Just by looking at their faces. Mm-hmm. So we've had family disputes. We've had, oh my goodness, we've had all sorts of things. People trying to take their shoes off in the kitchen, people stealing each other's macaroons.
Stealing macaroons.
Yes. Fights over macaroon allocation. Yeah. People setting each other's recipes on fire because they're frustrated. I mean,
on purpose?
On purpose.
Wow.
In fairness, it was two sisters who were not children, by the way. It was them with their husbands and their children. And that was, they were ready to travel back home, let's say.
Okay.
But we've had some funny things, but we just get the most wonderful clients.
Yeah.
And it's their safe space, and they, you know, I mean, we don't want recipes set on fire, but if they're comfortable to do so, I guess that's a...
Yeah, when I did tours, it was fun because you meet people, and you're actually making their vacation better or their time in France better. And I'd have to say, like, 99% of our guests were fantastic.
Fabulous.
But the one question I remember... This woman asked me, we were in a chocolate shop, and I was showing everybody everything. And she said, you know, I held up something. And I said, this is like my favorite thing of the store. And she goes, would my father like that? And it wasn't like a bad question. It was just funny. You know, when people are on vacation, they're jet lagged and stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know your father. But she was very nice, too. It's not a criticism, but... It's interesting because France sometimes gets a reputation outside of France and even in France as being sexist. People look at, you know, they read the news and they see things or they hear things. And what's it like to be a woman? Because actually, I was once reading an article about this and this woman was writing about it, a French woman. She goes, well, actually, we have, like, when you have a baby, you can put your baby in like a creche and go back to work. It's actually a very... You know, there's a lot of things that don't exist in other countries.
Right.
So is it hard to be a woman here in business, or have you had any problems, or have people treated you differently?
That's a very good question. And I look at that through the lens of, I'm already an anomaly. I'm an American woman that's here running a business. Mm-hmm. I will say, hands on heart, I've never had an issue because I was a woman running a business.
Okay.
Now, I did have people look at me with curiosity as to how I would dare start a business in food because I don't have experience and I've just changed careers. that was, I think, more of the dilemma for people. Mm-hmm. But I think when you get to an area where people hopefully respect what you bring, I don't think that I've had an issue in my role because of gender. Now, there are things that operate differently here.
Like running a business in France, there was this campaign that France ran a few years ago about how easy it is to do business in France. And I remember seeing the websites in English, and they were trying to get people to come here and start businesses.
Yes.
I always wanted to open an ice cream shop here. And
I tread carefully.
Yeah. I actually don't have a lot of business. I'm not a business person, per se. I make really good ice cream, but that's the extent of my bragging. So I didn't do it. And people said, you know, it's hard, employees, hiring people, and so forth, and firing people and so forth.
Absolutely.
Would you say it's harder to do business in France than it is in the U.S., or easier, or similar, or just different?
I would say it's probably different. Now, I've never run a business in the U.S., so my U.S. colleagues would probably correct me, but I feel like it's different. There are support mechanisms here in France, obviously, that don't exist in the U.S. for employees. Mm-hmm. It is a very labor-intensive environment, so you have to be aware of that as an employer. But all in all, I think that the government tries to protect a bit small businesses. Mm-hmm. It is tax heavy. We know that. So if you want to come to France and make a lot of money, just check carefully.
A friend of mine who's in the financial world, she's like, if you don't like paying taxes, France is not necessarily the place for you.
Right.
But there is a really good social structure.
Absolutely.
That the system supports. So it's not like you're just throwing money. Well, you're paying and you're getting something for it.
Yes. The other thing I'll add is the dilemma that you know, David.
Oh.
France is not transactional. You will get nothing done if you don't have relationships.
Right.
And if you come at it from a North American view of, I'm going to make a transaction, you will get the door closed in your face so quickly. They don't care. They're not commercially driven.
Yeah.
At all. It's relationships.
It's true. Sometimes shopkeepers, they were like, oh, we're not selling anything today.
Yeah.
You're like, what?
You're like, well, I'm here to buy.
Yeah, I'm here to buy. Here's the money. Can I just buy that? And they're like, no, sorry, we're closed. You know, it's 8 o'clock. I'm like, well, the register's still open. It's 8:00. It's like 8 o'clock plus 30 seconds.
Yeah.
They're like, come back. And they're nice. You know, they're not like doing it to be jerks.
Yeah.
She's like, no, we're closed.
Or it's like they publish a closing time, but a half an hour before, they're preparing
like
the
that.
Closing.
Yeah. So they won't let you in. They're like, we're closing at 8:00. I'm like, well, it's 7:40.
They're like, oh, no.
Yeah, I just want to buy like bugles or something.
Yeah.
So your book is full of insights about France. You opened this cooking school. You're a big success. You went through a lot of stuff to do this school. And the book is almost 300 pages.
Yes.
And you talk about you've had to deal with COVID.
Yes.
You know, being closed for months.
Yes.
Maybe a year. There was ash clouds. People couldn't fly out. There were strikes, gilets jaunes. What made you say, I want to write a book about this?
So I will put that in the same bucket as La Cuisine coming as an idea out of the blue. And the book came during COVID, to be fully transparent, because I had a bit of time on my hands, let's say. You know, when you were in food and tourism, which was the vortex of hell in the COVID period, you have a lot to think about in terms of, you know, I mean, we all were wondering what will our futures be.
Yeah.
It was just the big unknown. So I probably used writing as a way for a bit of mental salvation to remind myself of how I've gotten to this point. So it started as a project to keep my sanity. And then it slowly turned into, oh, this could be a book. But that was all by chance. That was all by chance.
The other thing, just getting back to the content of the book a bit, I loved your observations about, you know, there's a lot of stories about moving to France and shared experiences, but you really kind of nailed these sort of intricacies, like trying to use a credit card, thinking it was a credit card, where their French credit cards are not credit cards. And I was like, when I moved here, I was confounded by these things. But you have a lot of stuff about table manners.
Yes.
Which is kind of interesting, because I went to a dinner party last night and I was thinking, you know, I knew you were coming today, and you talk about things. Tell us some of the curious things about table manners in France that people might find Interesting.
Okay, so let me put this in the context of, you know, of course, things are evolving and it's all so dependent on who you're with and what are the circumstances. Yes. So let's talk about the fun thing, which I think is formal dining, because then you get a lot of the, not mannerisms, but a lot of the customs that may feel a bit weird or odd.
Yeah. Stiff.
Stiff.
Yeah.
A little stiff.
I consider them stiff.
A little stiff. Yeah. And one of the examples I give in the book, but I talk about all the time, so I think it's quite fun, is, you know, most hosts or hostesses have a seating plan.
Yes.
That's super important.
And it's always man, woman, man, woman.
Yeah. And they've probably thought very carefully about where to position people to keep the flow of the discussion. And, you know, here I am running, I think I said, like a hog to the trough because I was hungry and I wanted to sit down.
Food.
Food. Let's go. And
pass the wine.
Yeah, I saw quite quickly that nobody had seated. So you pop up and realize, okay, there's a plan. And at a formal dining table, it's polite to follow the flow of the group. Mm-hmm. That's very important here. People don't like to stand out. They all wear the same sneakers. They, you know, dress alike. And when you're in a formal dining, take the dish if the hostess has presented it. You don't pass. There's things like that. Wine, in my experience, is still a gentleman will pour for a lady. I still see that happening. I don't take offense to it. It's just a part of the culture, and it's meant to be polite. I don't take it as...
I take offense if I'm at a restaurant, and the woman orders the wine, and then they give it to me to taste.
Yes, like, that's offensive.
Yeah, especially but if, when the woman is like a sommelier and I'm just
yes,
me.
Absolutely.
Like, she
that's where it's wrong.
Yeah.
That's where people need to really be in touch with their audience and who's doing what and who's ordered. But if my wine glass is empty...
you don't care who fails.
I'm like, just somebody get some wine in there. What are we doing, people?
Get the friggin' wine in there.
Yeah. It would probably, if the host is a male, it would probably embarrass him if I go to pour it myself because it looks as though he is not taking care of his table.
Which he's not doing.
Which he's not. And my glass is empty. And that's in. That's not
and
to
gosh
be tolerated.
Darn it, I need my wine.
Exactly. So. Well,
it's funny because when we have people, we decide we weren't going to have the rules in our house.
Yes.
Like anybody who wants to eat here, they could sit wherever they want. They could
sit
do whatever they
want.
They could pour wine. We don't care.
Right.
And still people show up and they hover around the table because they're used to.
They
like,
want to know
saying,
where to sit.
Yeah. And they're used to like the male sits there, then a female. And you always separate couples in France, which I don't like because I'm like, well, I want to be with Roma. And I guess the idea in France is, well, you're with them all the time. You want to meet new people. It's like, I'm actually shy and introverted. Like,
as am I. So it gives me anxiety to be sitting next to complete strangers.
Yeah. And French don't really do small talk well.
No.
I actually went to an event and no one talked. It was a food event. It was like 25 people. No one talked to me for like 30 minutes. We were all mingling except me.
Yeah.
I was trying to fill my wine glass. And then we sat down and I started talking. And everyone around me was like super nice and super interesting. And we all talked and it was great.
Yeah.
And I made like four new friends.
Yes. But it's hard to get into that mode.
Yeah.
Small talk is not high on the, and again, you know, I'm an introvert as well. I know that might be shocking given that I run a cooking school, but small talk does not come quickly to the average French person.
Yes. It's like a real discussion.
Yeah.
So if you see Jane in France and her wine glass is empty, whether you're a man or a woman.
Run over please, right away.
Please fill her
please
glass.
Fill my goblet.
So she doesn't make any faux pas. Well, I want to tell everyone, this is a great read, The French Ingredient. Like I said, I tore through it.
Can I please also say that David is in it?
Yes, I'm in the book. Spoiler.
As you know. Can I say why?
You're welcome. This is your interview.
I'd love to say why.
But don't cry.
Okay, I may.
Okay.
I'd love to say why. I was thinking, when did I meet David? And I know exactly how I met you. I
and
know
you
the circumstances.
You changed the names of everybody but me.
I changed the names of most of the characters. I believe in personal privacy.
Except when it comes to me.
Except for David. No, because David did something extraordinary. And I want to say, and this is why I think you're just
I'm going to cry.
Good, please. I think that'll make this go viral.
You better tell the story then. You said you would. I was going to cut you off.
David did something extraordinary, and this is why I came to adore you as a person. So if you do not recall, I met you via Twitter.
What?
Yes. And this must have been 2000. I was trying to go through the dates in my mind trying to find an old email.
I meet women online. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
I picked you up online.
Okay.
It was probably 2010, 2011.
because my tagline was like, I pour wine.
Yeah, you will always have a full glass with
my
me.
My glass is always full.
You had posted just a small sentence and said, I'm looking for a place to do a book signing.
What?
Does anybody know a venue? Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Okay.
So I saw that pop up. Here's David Leibovitz. And I thought, oh, my God, I have to reply to this. So I took time. I wrote back. I was so excited to exchange a tweet with David Leibovitz. And what was the most great surprise out of it is that you just turned to be this wonderfully normal person.
Oh.
Which was such a treat.
I don't know if I'm normal.
Well, you still are because we're both crazy. So
okay.
That's fine. But that's such a treat because when you put someone on a pedestal and you look up to them and they come out to be just a genuinely wonderful person, that's so fabulous, as opposed to people that you put on a pedestal and frankly, they put themselves on a pedestal much higher than you ever could. Oh. That's not fun when you discover people like that. So long story short, that's how I met you. And so that means we've had more than 10 years of friendship. And when COVID hit and you saw that La Cuisine was really struggling, without me saying a word, you stepped forward and offered to host an event where proceeds would go to La Cuisine. And you pulled Ed Kimber in to do an online class. And it was for Christmas of 2020 when we were in the depths of darkness. And that just was so, I can't even express how wonderful that was. So thank you.
Oh, well, it was a pleasure doing it. But I remember it. I saw on Twitter you were looking for someone to do a class during COVID because you needed people to tune in. And no, just kidding.
Do you still use Twitter?
I do, but I just post like newsletter updates. I don't go on it. And I still can't call it X. I don't.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm from San Francisco.
And I went to Twitter when there was like 7 people who worked there.
Wow.
So, and they, I walked in and they all covered their screens with their hands. So I couldn't see the code
because
that was the code for Twitter. I'm like, believe me, I have no idea what that code means. But they all ate breakfast cereal. And that's what I learned. Like breakfast cereal is what you eat when you're working at the computer because it's not messy. It's in a spoon.
Okay.
You don't have to aim. You don't have to cut anything. And it's pretty good for you. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I learned that. And I also learned that if you eat caramel corn, you could do it with chopsticks. Your fingers don't get dirty. So my friend Louisa Chu in Chicago told me that.
That's pretty cool.
See, I'm a font of useless knowledge or semi-useful knowledge. But anyhow, if you see Jane on the street anywhere in a restaurant.
Give me wine.
Give her wine, pour her a glass. When I raise my glass to you, so the book is The French Ingredient, and it's published spring of 2024. It's a wonderful memoir, and it names names. I'm in here, of course, and lots of others. But there's lots of stories about France, lots of tips about traveling to France, astuces. And even more fun, if you come to France, you can meet Jane, come to her cooking school, get a copy of the book signed. She's at lacuisineparis.com. And if you forget the URL, it's in the show notes, but it also just type La Cuisine Paris, which is what I do in Google, and it takes me to the site. So thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you, David.
And congratulations on your first book.
Thank you.
It was a great book, and someone told me when I wrote my first book, they said, enjoy the ride. So enjoy the ride.
I will try to do so.
You look terrified, but it's fun. It's fun, and it's great. You did a great job with the book.
Well, thank you.
Thank you all for tuning in. If you want to check out my newsletter where I have show notes for this and links to Jane's book, links to her website, and some extra additional information, that's at davidleibovitz.substack.com. Thanks for tuning in. See you on the next podcast.